Hey guys, before we get started on this episode, well, as you can see, I had a good time on my bachelor party. Well, Scott and I recorded early Monday morning. Scott was at the event this weekend, so he was traveling home yesterday. I was traveling home yesterday. We just felt it would be best to do it Monday morning. Little did we know that Skype and technology would not cooperate. It was a struggle, and there's a few points in this episode where it might sound a little wonky or it might cut abruptly. We apologize for that. Scott and I, one thing we always try and do is put out the best quality audio we possibly can to make the listening of the show good. This episode had a few points, like I said, where it was tough. We had to pause maybe 10 times during this episode. So I did my best to edit it together. I think it's still fine. It's still a fun episode to listen to. We get into the recap of the BP Crew event and everything. Yankees are playing well right now, so that's really the good thing. But just bear with us in this episode, and we appreciate it, guys. Enjoy the episode.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What is up, guys? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 343. We're doing a little role reversal here because the weekend has maybe been a little bit more kind to me, although that's not saying too much. Andrew is back from his bachelor party. I know JJ is very concerned, was all concerned about him the entire weekend, but it looks like you survived. Welcome back. How are you doing?
Well, so by the sound of your voice and the sound of my voice, we had similar weekends. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm here.
You are here. That's true.
Showing up.
You can lie about that one.
Showing up is just show up, right? I don't even know how that saying goes. My brain is operating on like 22% functionality right now.
Yeah. Showing up is half the battle.
Showing up is half the battle. In my case, it is the entire battle today, but I am here.
Very good. Well, we all know you had your bachelor party. You were, we had the event this weekend. Anything that I know you're not. Look, I know bachelor parties, like, we don't talk about them. We kind of just like let that happen. But successful bachelor party, you had a good time with your buddies and all that?
Very successful. No major injuries. That was the first thing I was concerned about. Most of the people on the thing were like 29 and up.
Yeah.
So once that happens and you spend 3 straight days drinking and eating like you're 21 years old,
right,
injuries are bound to happen. No major injuries, so check mark there. No people lost.
That's good.
Check mark there.
That's good. When you say no major injuries, hospital visits?
I'm just saying, like, you gotta. Well, first of all, we did have a guy on the trip with a torn ACL, but he didn't do that on the bachelor party.
Oh, okay.
He did that long ago. He's having surgery this week. He waited. He's had a torn ACL for like a month and a half, and he waited until after the bachelor party to have the surgery.
Smart.
So, very smart. He just powered through with a knee brace. No major injuries, meaning no irreparable damage to the body that is going to last more than maybe Wednesday of this week.
And for the record, because, speaking for the doctor on the show, I do not condone, waiting a month to get an ACL repaired in your knee, just so everybody understands that.
If you're trying to play baseball, maybe not, but if you're trying to just have a fun weekend.
So we had obviously just some housekeeping and a little bit of recapping of what went down over the weekend. Obviously the BP Crew event was on Saturday. It was, we missed you there. I know a lot of people were talking about you couldn't deny where the hell that you weren't there. I mean, that was a topic of conversation. I'm not going to lie. JJ didn't help matters with a shirt.
Yeah. I was going to say whose fault is that?
I think JJ could have helped himself if he actually had a darker colored text, yes, on the gray shirt. Didn't, yes, help himself, because when he got on the Jumbotron at Yankee Stadium, you couldn't see it as much. You know, the contrast, you have to fight through that that gray-white contrast. Not easy. So I think
he's an idea man. He's not an execution guy.
Right. If I had known about this, I feel like I could have helped. But it was a lot of fun. We again, just like, the majority of them, a lot of very familiar faces, a lot of new faces, But a good time had by all. The Yankees won, I think, the most important thing, although we were getting no hit for four innings. So it was the mood was a little weird for a few innings, you know, as there's no offense. You can't get like insane about things, but then it opened up and was a blast. It really was a good time.
So I found it very endearing that JJ checked in on me much more this weekend than anyone else in my life. I got like one text from my mom on Sunday morning being like, how was it?
Yep.
Leanne texted me a couple times, but JJ all weekend on Twitter, where's Andrew? Where's Andrew? He was very concerned about my whereabouts. And I thought that was cute. I also thought, you know, he wished he was invited. I think that we found out so. He felt a little left out. I know he had fun at the event. The event looked awesome. I did have a little FOMO because that's the first event since we started doing them that I've missed.
Yeah.
You've had to miss some for various
hurricane
reasons.
Illness,
health. And yeah, this is the first one I had to miss. For a second, some of the guys were like, hey, surprise, we rented a bus. We're driving down to the Bronx today. And I'm like, it's 4:30 right now. I don't think we're going to make it, yeah. But yeah, it was a lot of, I'm not going to lie. It was funny to watch all the stuff going up on Twitter.
Yeah.
Made me miss everybody. Wish I was there. Made me just can't wait for the July event. Pretty much is just get back into it with everyone.
There you go. Okay. You need to shut up for a minute now. There's a lot of rambling happening.
I don't tell you to shut up when I'm leaving.
Yeah, but you just had a bachelor party. So you can take this. And by the way, I appreciate that Leanne didn't text you 100 times during the weekend. I think a lot of guys going through their bachelor party would say that is a very good sign right there. You know,
it was like twice.
Let the guys have their weekend.
Once in the morning and once like late afternoon.
Okay, so we have some just quick housekeeping events that are coming up. Obviously, the July 20th is the next BP Crew Again event against Colorado. That's at Yankee Stadium. July 6th is actually the next one if you look at the calendar. That is for the invasion at Tampa. We're going to Tampa. We're invading the place. The t-shirt design, I'm very excited for. We got some props this time. It's going to be a blast. So if you are still on the fence for whatever reason, get off the fence, buy the tickets. They're going to be on sale probably this week, and that's it. I'm going to get some extra shirts so we can hopefully accommodate everybody, but get them this week. July 6th is the event. And Andrew, why don't you tell us about the watch party on June 29th for the London Games?
Yes, watch party, Tavern 29 in the city. It's next weekend, next Saturday. I'm going to be there around 12:30. First pitch is at 1 o'clock. We have an area in the bar that we're going to have. So just come in, look around, take a 360 view. You'll see us. And it's going to be a fun time. I think we have about 30 people confirmed, and who knows, more people might roll in throughout the afternoon. I tweeted Jim Larritz to tell him to come around. I don't know if he's going
to
come.
Oh, that's good. He doesn't get invited to Yankee Stadium for Old Timers Day, but he does get invited to our watch parties.
He felt left out, so yeah. I wanted to include him.
Absolutely, you should. He's the king, king of New York right there. So, all right, cool. So let's get into some of these games. We had an 8-game winning streak. That was very, very good. I think when you look at what just happened this past week with sweeping Tampa and getting into Houston and taking 3 of 4, you know, not really taking yesterday's game with J-Hap's debacle and using that as the emotional bar, but looking at the grand scheme of things, 8-game winning streak. That was pretty damn good, especially after we talked about this last time, but after losing 8 of 11, you come back and you win and sweep against Tampa, obviously division foe, and then Houston, who, you know, we lost some pretty bad games, some tough games early in the season to them. So I think it was important that we got back.
We each said this might be the most important homestand of this entire season, and so far they've taken 6 out of 7 games.
Yeah.
So I think it's some more than what you'd sign up for. Losing the game on Sunday, when you looked at the entire weekend with Verlander versus Hap, you're probably already conceding that game just going into it. I know that you can't really – baseball doesn't work like that. Everything changes day to day. But you're going to face Verlander. It's going to be a tough day. Hap sucked. So that was just a wash from the beginning. But you take 3 out of 4, and you pretty much could have taken 2 out of 3 from Houston earlier in the season. So you backed it up and proved that you can beat this. I know they're dealing with injuries. Yeah. I know Houston's dealing with injuries, but they're still a very
talented team. Springer,
are
the two guys that they're missing. They played some sloppy baseball.
was it Yordan Alvarez?
Yeah, I mean he was
a wrecking crew. They found a new superstar.
Pretty much.
Okay, great.
Much, yeah, 21 years old too, I believe.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was a hell of a weekend, and you know we'll just run through some of these games and talk about some of the storylines they're heading in. But Thursday night it was a 4-game set. So Thursday was, you know, it was the continuation of the Gary and Glaber show, because these guys both homered for the second straight game. They were dominant. Gary hit a ball that is still traveling to the moon. And we got the, you know, the old Chad Cortez Jr. start from the bullpen. And again, it set us off because, you know, this was a big game to me, because when you're looking at a 4-game set and you're starting the series with the opener, you know, the opener situation, the Chad Cortez Jr. situation, it's dangerous. It could go bad fast. And if that does go bad fast, then you're putting yourself behind the eight ball for the entire series. But, you know, they did well, not as well as they had in the past, but I think good enough.
Yeah. What would totaled 5 innings
and 2 runs,
hits,
I believe.
2 runs.
Yeah.
Which look at the next night, what Paxton gave you, a 5-inning start.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, when you think of it that way, I think with an opener, it depends how you think of it, right? If you look at what the two guys that they had a plan for did, then it is kind of like a starting pitcher. I do you think they're just getting lucky? Now they're, what are they, 6-0 now or 5-0 with this setup?
They haven't lost with it.
Do you think it's just a little luck? Because some of these games, all of these games, really, the offense like pummels the ball.
Yeah.
It seems like it always works out that way, where they have a big lead at some point when they're using the opener.
So I think this is a different situation where the regular, if you're looking at what other teams do with this opener situation, I mean, take the Rays, for instance, they do it on multiple days. You can't really line up those guys, the same guys on a daily basis. If you're doing it multiple times, if you're doing it like the Yankees, because they're doing it for one start, you're lining up the same guys, you know what you're kind of getting from Chad Green. And ultimately, if you're looking for 2 innings from him, you know, he's been very consistent, honestly, with these 2 innings. And he's been, ever since he's come into this role, you know, he's been back to that dominant Chad Green. And when Nestor Cortez comes in there, he's giving you these, you know, this different look. He's eating the innings. There's not a lot of guys making good contact off of him. So, you know, getting 2 to 3 to 4 innings out of him is not a stretch anymore, I don't think.
Isn't it interesting how this is more like the role that Joe Girardi used Chad Green in? Not that Chad Green ever opened, but just the amount of days that he's pitching and the time off in between outings is more like 2017 than 2018.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I think it's, you know, maybe that's the Girardi did have the formula with the as much crap as we gave him.
Maybe it's a mental thing for Chad Green, just to get it in his head when I'm pitching, so I can be ready, what I can do in between. Who knows?
It's not far-fetched to say it's a physical thing. I mean, the guy started, he was a starting pitcher at one point. That's how he started his career. He was the guy that had this routine in between his starts. So now that it's cut down, it's not all there as far as the workload, but he's also getting that rest as well. So it very well could be a thing for his body where he can get back to that place where he's repeating his mechanics and getting to the right spots all in. And that's what was problem. That was one of the biggest problems for him, is that he was not mechanically right. And then it got into his head.
So I know based on, we're going to have injury updates later, but Herman is throwing bullpens, right?
Yes. No, he's throwing. It looks like he's really ramping back up to get, I think they're projecting that they could see him, in the Subway Series early July at some point.
What are the chances that he becomes the second pairing with Chad Green, and then they use Chad Green twice in a 5-man rotation as the opener, and then until they can get more starting pitchers healthy or trade for a starting pitcher, you have Nestor Cortez with Chad Green and Domingo Herman with Chad Green.
Nestor Cortez or David Hale or whichever that guy is, because
yeah,
it's going to be
and
a
Herman's
roster
still there. Like they're still going to have to manage Herman's innings. He's still not going to just go back into the rotation and make every fifth day start 6+ innings. It's not going to happen.
Right. So just talking about that quickly, the Domingo Herman. This is from Brian Hoke. He's been on the 10-day injured list since June 9th with the hip flexor. And we know it's been bothering him since May, that his start in Kansas City. But he was given a cortisone shot on June 11th, and he started playing catch again on June 17th. But he's been tossing bullpen sessions this past week. He's been running bases. You know, all these things are looking good for him to come back. So they're probably now stretching him out, making sure that the arm is all. And everything he's saying is that he feels really good. He feels strong. He feels healthy. And that's a good thing. Yeah. Obviously, get that lower half.
The injury was fake.
That's a couple other quick ones. Ben Heller also started rehab in Tampa, so that's another big arm that's coming back. He's coming back from Tommy John surgery, so you know that road is unclear on how he'll look coming back, but he's started that you know, the rehab stint, so he's actually in games. He's been throwing for a little while now. And Severino, again, we're looking after the All-Star break, but he's been throwing from, you know, 105 feet, the distances that we all hear, and they're hoping that
he's been throwing from Manhattan to the Bronx. It's 700 feet.
The report is distances as great as 105 feet.
Great,
but
start scaling it back to 60 feet 6 inches, please.
And that's where he's next. So he's scheduled to throw from a mound, you know, at some point this week, I think. So, you know, all these things are really good. Obviously, these are all pitching updates, which is what we want. You know, we want these pitching updates.
But that's all the injuries now.
Yeah, that's all.
We've gotten to a point other than Cameron Maybin. But we've got to a point where the big guys are back.
So that'll be good. Obviously, when those guys come back, gives us more flexibility in the rotation in the bullpen. I do think they're going to do some funky stuff with Chad Green and Herman and Cortez / Hale. All those guys can give them a little bit of length, more than you know, your standard bullpen guy. So it'll be interesting how Boone, you know, shakes that out. The Gleyber and Gary show, again, this was the third game in a row where they both homered, and that was the mammoth shot. I called it that Gary hit one that was going to the moon on Thursday. It actually was the one on Friday that I was thinking of, and that was when Paxton started to give 5 innings. Talking about Paxton quickly, I thought Paxton was good-ish. Again, we're looking for back-to-back starts from him that can be something that we could take positives. He threw 100 pitches. He had some swings and misses, struck out 7 guys, walked 3. Obviously, we want that cleaned up, because when you're walking 3 guys in 5 innings, not so good.
Yeah, so this is he got into the 6th inning, right?
Yep.
And then they pulled him when a guy got on base.
Yes.
It is still just a lot of pitches to even get the strikeouts too. Because I was
when you have a lot of strikeouts, you're going to throw a lot of pitches.
7 strikeouts and 3 walks. So that's a lot of non-contact, and then that means just a lot of pitches. So I know he's a fast 4-seam fastball guy. He also relies on a fastball up, which can get a lot of weak fly balls. But we're really not seeing that. So the pitches are piling up into the 5th inning, and I don't know. Is he a guy that they're not going to push any of their starters deeper than like 100-ish pitches?
Well, not right now, especially not Paxton. Not with the injury history that he's got, and obviously, you know, he just came back from dealing with more, just being beat up. And I think that, you know, he's had freak injuries, but he's also had a variety of injuries. So that's they're definitely going to be careful with him, because if they're going to move forward, we talked about this, Paxton and Tanaka need to take that next level and step up and be that 1 and 2, because we don't know when Severino's coming back. We don't know if he's going to be back at all, let alone fully healthy and the guy that we can really depend on. We just don't know. I'm not saying that he can't be. I'm not saying that he won't be. It's just a very big unknown at this point, because, again, he's throwing from 105 feet. He's not throwing from a mound even yet. So, you know, we're waiting to see how he ramps up, and hopefully there's no setbacks.
If we're going to see more openers, or even a consistent one-time opener, Paxton and Tanaka are going to have to go deeper than 5 innings. It's just, otherwise it won't work. The bullpen will be absolutely toasted by the time September rolls around. Because if you try and use Britton and Ottavino and Canely and Chapman every night for like 4 out of 5 rotations, they're screwed.
Yeah,
we're seeing some of these guys start to, I think, just tire at this point in the season.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a really good point, because the one guy who's been driving me kind of nuts is Britton. And when I'm seeing when I see Britton and what we signed, I mean, obviously you're looking at 2015, 2016 was the big year that he had, but both all-star years, you're looking at those and you're like, okay, can we get some semblance of that? We're not looking for that because I mean, he was literally one of the best seasons of any relief pitcher in the history of baseball in 2016. The guy was phenomenal and unbelievable. So are you really expecting that? No. But are you expecting a very, you know, maybe split the difference and get close to a guy that can go out there effectively, throw strikes and get those ground balls like he's supposed to do? And that's what you're looking for. And to me, when I'm seeing that's concerning about him is the walk ratio. I pulled some numbers. I did some stats. I did a stat thing.
Look at you.
2015. And what I'm doing is I'm looking at his two all-star years just as a bar. I'm like, I understand that they don't have to be this point. But it's an interesting comparison because in 2015, and I'm looking at walks per nine and strikeouts per walk. So the walks per nine, 1.9. This is 2015. And 5.64 strikeouts per walk. 2016, he was at 2.4 walks per nine and 4.1 strikeouts per walk. This year, 2019, we're looking at 5 walks per nine. Huge difference, like glaring, glaring difference. And 1.39 strikeouts per walk. So, I mean, to me, when I'm looking at these numbers, they're very, very clear, like what the difference is in this guy. He's not throwing strikes. And that's a big problem.
Yeah, and I almost feel like the walks also happen in bunches. You hear of hits in bunches, but you don't normally hear walks in bunches. But he comes in and he either has the strike zone or he doesn't have the strike zone.
Yeah, and today his last couple of appearances in Houston, he had I think 5 total walks on what it was Friday and Sunday. And I know one of them was an intentional, or I'm sorry, on Saturday. I know one of them was an intentional. Boone actually loaded the bases to force Houston, and he got out of it. He got out of it. It was a sinking long line drive to Aaron Judge that all of us collectively held our breath and like gave a gasp, like because it looked like it was going to drop from where we were in 205. But thankfully, Aaron Judge is a savior and a god, and he caught the ball. But it's concerning because he's walking guys, not throwing strike zones. I think I saw that he threw. Like 13 of 25, I believe, pitches for strike. So you're not seeing that high rate of strike throwing from him. And when that's the case, you're going to get more balls, I think, elevated because you're missing the zone. Guys are going to sit on pitches more, and they're not going to be, you know, fooled by the hard sinking stuff that he normally has that gets those ground balls.
So is it fatigue with Britton? And I know Ottavino has struggled really the last like 3 weeks where he hasn't looked like the same Ottavino. With some walks, Canely's had a couple of outings that he hasn't looked right. Is it fatigue with them?
Yeah, I mean, otherwise,
I don't know what else it could be.
No, I think again with fatigue comes mechanical breakdowns because when your legs get tired, when your you know upper body gets tired or whatever it is, you can get out of sync a lot more easily. You can't feel your body as much or as well as you could if you were in good physical shape.
I was very jealous of you guys for that game. Not only because it looked like a ton of fun in the stands and everything, you guys got a back and forth game. When I think back to all of the games that we've had a BP event at, this might be the most exciting from just a baseball standpoint.
Yeah, no, it was a very good back and forth game in this from the fourth inning on. after Wade Miley stopped throwing a no hitter against us and Gio Urshela hit that, it was a 2-run home run. Again, I've talked about this in the past. Like when we have these events, it's very difficult for me to understand what's happening on the field because I don't stop talking. As my mother said, I have diarrhea of the mouth. So I talk to as many people as I can because it's fun and I look forward to that. But yeah, Gio Urshela broke up the no hitter, and then it seemed to everything seemed good at that point, right? Like it went
floodgates opened at that point.
Floodgates open. But then Jonathan Holder came in and of course with a lead, gave up the lead immediately and put the put Houston back into the game and on top. And you know, we're getting home runs from places that are not expected. Gio Urshela, I think it was his 6th of the year. Austin Romine comes, you know, gives us the ties the game back up again. So yes, it was a lot of fun going back. Stanton had some big hits, not home runs, singles. With runners in scoring position, singles that were
direct carbon copies of each other, essentially.
Yes, and it's almost fortunate because they're coming off the glove and trickling into the outfield and allowing a second runner to score on one of them. And you're looking at just I think fortunate, because I think if the ball gets through, there's a high possibility only one run comes in. So,
and they were both counted as hits. I always thought maybe the first one was going to be an error, but I think mentally for Stanton, who after day one goes 0-for-4 and hears a couple of boos, and Stanton hadn't really had any moments yet.
I mean, he did have multiple. He had three or four hits the other night. So it's not like he hadn't driven in a run yet, hadn't hit in a home run. So the production
those two hits, the Yankees don't win that game without those two hits. Yeah. So those are big hits for Stanton. Hopefully, can springboard him, because it's kind of funny, they get Stanton back and for 3 days Stanton is back and everything, and then Judge comes back and no one gives a shit about Stanton anymore.
Well, speaking about Judge, he has started off relatively slow at the plate. And we had this conversation last episode. What's it going to take? What kind of an offer is it going to take for Aaron Judge to get booed at Yankee Stadium? I said, probably nothing. Like, nobody's going to boo this guy. You said maybe 25, 26. And I think we both agreed that it would have to be in the right circumstances for that to happen. I didn't hear any boos. I didn't hear anything for him. He cut down a runner. That was a big play. I think it was Tanaka's last out, and cut down a runner at second base, a laser to cut down Stassi at second base. And, you know, whether he's producing at the plate or in the field, the guy's productive and he's just a presence out there. So, yeah, I don't see him getting booed.
He was still on base and scored a couple runs. I would say that he would have to come back from London and then back from that Mets series and still not have a hit. And then maybe some asshole out in the bleachers will give him a boo.
Yeah.
And then get a beer dumped on him.
Right. Yeah. So I don't even see that scenario playing out. Like, I think this guy is invincible. Susan and John, I was listening to them for all of Old Timers Day.
Yeah. They had a rough game.
Yeah. No, it wasn't John on Old Timers. It was Sweeney and Susan for Old Timers Day. It was actually very entertaining. It was just straight entertainment. Like, you don't really care what's happening production wise on the field, but these guys are getting interviews with all the old guys. A lot of fun. But they were talking about Bernie Williams being one of the only guys that's not booable. And they were talking about it. Like, Derek Jeter got booed. So they were talking about these guys that did get booed.
I don't even remember really Jeter getting booed.
I don't remember it much either. But from what Susan says, you know, booed. Bernie, no boos. No boos.
Okay. Bernie was a great, great player, and he was. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just mild mannered guy? People are like, I'm not.
Yeah, how the hell are you ever going to Bernie Williams? Boo, yeah, Bernie Williams.
Say.
It's he's the guy that went about his business flawlessly, and he was like the model athlete to go out there. He wore glasses in the outfield, for God's sakes, not rec specs, glasses. So the guy was out there running in glasses. They were probably moving all over the place, still tracking down balls.
I was listening Sunday afternoon on the drive home from the bachelor party to the game itself, the Sunday afternoon game. And John had a rough game. He misdiagnosed 3 home runs in the first 3 innings. So according to John Sterling, the Yankees had a lead in that game early. So that was nice to hear, except then you heard the actual score and it wasn't the real score. The Hicks one, I know it was a very close home run foul ball. He got all the way to "it is gone."
Oh, I heard it. I heard that one. I was listening
before
to him.
He slipped in. Oh, it's foul. What? Come on, John. He had Luke Voit turning a double play when there were already 2 outs. It was a rough one for John, and I kind of give him a pass because he was emceeing the event. It's a sunny day out. It's hot. He's wearing a suit. He's going to be 81 in like a week. That's a long day. 4 game series against Houston, late nights. So I gave John Sterling a pass. John Sterling called that game like I was feeling. So I kind of felt it was like a kinship.
Yeah, you bonded over the struggle. I heard the Hicks home run. It was gone. Like, gone. Definitely.
I waited. We waited. Gone. I was driving in the car with my buddy. We waited until he said gone, and then we high-fived, and then he goes, it's foul. You got to be freaking kidding me.
I couldn't do anything but laugh at that one. I was like, I did the whole shake my hand. I basically like did the whole get off my lawn, fist in the air when I heard that. But yeah, no, he had a rough day. It was, it was a very tough call. You know who didn't have a rough day on Sunday, even though, the Yankees did lose the losing streak. They lost 9-4. Hap had a horrible day. We'll talk about that. But you know who didn't have a horrible day? DJ LeMahieu.
Justin Verlander.
DJ LeMahieu. DJ LeMahieu did not have a horrible day. He hit home run number 10. That's halfway before the halfway point of the season, mind you, halfway to 20, the bar of 20, the finish line of 20, although I think he's going to go higher than that. But it was a beautiful home run because it was the exact home run. And it was the exact reason why I said he was going to hit over 20. That ball scraped the wall. I mean, just barely got over the wall, barely looked like he hit it. And it was a home run. It was perfect.
Yes, you're right. He has picked up his pace, but they've also played more home games. So that's an out in other ballparks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care. That's why he's at home and hitting home runs. That's the reason. You can't use my reason against me.
It only took up until June 23rd for someone to start the narrative on Twitter that I hate DJ LeMahieu.
Oh, no, we've said this before. Yeah, we've said this before.
Yeah, but people still, I haven't seen it being put out there yet. So
I'm glad that people finally recognize it. You know, I don't know what you have against freckled kid, kids with a lot of freckles. I have freckles. I mean, do you hate me? Is that it? Are you mirroring?
I don't hate DJ LeMahieu nearly as much as I hate Ronald Torres.
That's true. Yeah.
But still.
Freckled kids and short guys.
I'm going to root against DJ LeMahieu hitting home runs just to be right and you to be wrong. But as soon as he hits 20, maybe he should just hit 30 at that point.
Oh, yeah, because then I'm going to take down Frank. Once I take you down, I got to take Frank's that bat down at 25.
25.
The one that I had a couple too many for. But no, he was good. Kid barely missed the cycle. I know people don't. So the cycle is like the batting average, apparently, for lots of people. David Cohn won't even like talk about it.
Would you rather have a cycle or a 3-home run game?
Probably 3-home run game.
Two home run game or the cycle?
The cycle.
Okay, so that's like the cutoff.
Give me red.
Would you rather have? Yeah. Would you rather have the cycle or 2 homers and 2 doubles?
This is stupid. I would rather have the cycle.
I could go all day, baby.
I would rather have the cycle. Give me something that actually that I can name. So J-Hap was bad, really bad. And the first loss that he's had since early May. I mean, people wouldn't think that, but it is. The guy has been fortunate, I think, with some run support. But he's also been much better as of before Sunday. Sunday, he was bad. 4 innings, 8 earned runs, 11 hits. 2 strikeouts and 3 home runs, including a grand slam. Not good. Not good. I listened to some of his comments after the game, and he was essentially saying some of the soft stuff was decent, but all the hard stuff got hit. Everything got hit, and he was trying some things out new. He's going to scrap the game. He's confident that he'll be back later. I don't necessarily understand what that means. Like he was trying new things in this game as far as like the repertoire and you know, how he was cycling through pitches, but whatever it was, they do need to throw it away because it didn't work.
Yeah. Why was he trying something new? If you look at his last 5 starts, 28 innings, 23 hits, 11 earned runs, that's a 3.54 ERA. The Yankees were 4-1 in those 5 starts.
Yeah.
That is kind of what the J-Hap that they signed up for. Those 5 starts. So why are you trying something new?
Well, I mean, you know, I think there's probably an element of maybe he didn't feel it, and there was some luck, or you know, just an element of luck and good fortune that he got through some of those things, but he wasn't feeling it to the extent that he wanted to. So he's still, as the professional that he is trying to tinker with it and get it right in his own body and feel good about it. So I don't know. It's strange. It was hearing his comments afterwards were a little off to me. The way that it was and how dismissive of the start he was. If you're looking for something that's relatively positive about that, it's that it was something different and that he's going to throw it away and that shouldn't happen again. But it's concerning in the sense that the production was awful, very awful. And you know, it was another big Yankees day. That was ended in a blowout. Really, it was a terrible game. The only reason it wasn't a blowout was because Luis Sessa actually kept them in a game, going in and eating up 4 innings. So, you know, whether you see that as mop up duty in the sense it was still against a good team and against a good lineup, positive signs for him, I guess.
Next start for J-Hap would come Sunday in London. Do you think that happens?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, you're saying that it might not happen and they'll give somebody else. I think it absolutely happens.
No, I mean, you could just push because of so many off days. I think they could push it so they could have someone else make that start. I don't know.
It almost seems like J-Hap would be like a perfect guy for that London series. Honestly, I feel like that, I feel like that moment you want a veteran guy in those moments. Like Tanaka is slated to throw. I would want Tanaka, or you're looking at a veteran like CeCe, or even Happus, I think is fine. I think they would all handle the moment well.
Yeah, I guess sure, they're all veterans, but I don't. It's just because of the off days. I didn't know if they were going to tinker with it because they could, and Hap just is coming off maybe his worst start of the season.
Oh, definitely.
He was so bad against Baltimore in four of his starts, but this was very, very ugly. You know, from the first batter, I looked at the replay on the Altuve home run. It was like an 84-mile-an-hour, I think, changeup down the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you're looking at Altuve, who jumps on pitches. I mean, the one guy who is very, very well known for jumping on pitches, early in the game, early in the count. Like, the guy is ready to go and is aggressive early on. So not the guy that you want to do that to. Sunday, also the Old Timers Day. I want to talk about this for a little bit. Mariano's first appearance, right? We're looking at Old Timers Day. Old Timers Day is a fun day. It's a fun day for the fans to get out there to see the guys they haven't seen in a while. You know, we're starting to see a lot more of these 90s guys. Pretty much the day is like, being taken over by a lot of these 90s guys. And I think that the majority of the fans that are in the stadium are probably the adults that have kids now and live through these 90s era. And those are their guys. Those are the guys they want to see out. And Mariano coming back for the first time, obviously getting inducted into the Hall of Fame next month. It was fun to see. And he did everything. He gave everybody a show. And that's kind of what you're looking for. It was fun to see him out there.
Yeah, I saw the replay of him throwing like just absolute gas to Luis Soho.
Yeah.
You knew, like, he on Instagram, you saw the video of him warming up in like his backyard or something, so you knew he was gonna bring it.
I don't think he knows anything else. He doesn't know anything different but to bring it.
And of course we got the jokes. Oh, can Mariano still pitch in the majors? Yeah, Mariano can still pitch in the majors. We all know that. He could pitch when he retired, and he just was like, you know what, I'm tired of this. I've done this for a long time. So yes, he could still pitch. It is the summer of Mariano, like the summer of George. This is the summer of Mariano.
It is. The first batter he faced, because he kind of came in and surprised Paul O'Neill, which I thought was very fitting. O'Neill's up there and says, well, you know what? I forget who was pitching before that, but Mariano comes in, enters Sandman, and busts him on the hands. He shakes his hand like his hand got broken. So it was fun to watch the back and forth. Mariano came in and he played center field, caught a ball in center field, and hit a Scott Kamenecki, who is looking his age, threw a ball down the gut, and Mariano just hit a laser up the middle. And I don't even know who was playing center field, but he wasn't fast.
Was it Jeff Nelson? I think
it might have been Jeff Nelson. They're all playing out of position, so
they're jogging. He was walking to the ball.
Yeah, so. And I was listening honestly to the broadcast, and at that point, who knew what was going on? But I knew that he hit a seed, and just kept running the bases. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun for him, I think, coming back. And he was definitely the man of the hour for that entire thing.
Is it weird for you that the 90s guys are now playing in the Old Timers Day?
No, I'm over. I mean, they've been playing for a while now. So we've seen a lot of these guys come back.
We've seen some of the other ones, yeah.
So they're not all consistently coming back. I think some of the other, like Tino didn't come back this year because he's taken a... he's doing stuff with Jeter. Posada isn't. Actually, Tino didn't take the job, right? Like he's going back and forth. I feel like he's still helping Jeter out. Posada officially took the role in Miami. So there's obviously like maybe a conflict there. I don't know. They're probably just going to wait that out. So you're not seeing all these guys come back consistently, but you're seeing, and then you're seeing the role players, the freaking Scott Harrisons of the world who get traded over in 09. You're seeing 09 guys come back. Like that's weird.
Yeah, I think sometimes they just have to fill a roster, so they put out the invite to a lot of different guys, except Jim Leritz,
who's still
it's not weird
and
for
always
me
there
because I still think when I think of Mariano or Derek Jeter or any of those guys, I still can put myself in my 12-year-old self, so it's not weird. You know, I think back to those memories. I think what down the line, once like Aaron Judge makes his Yankees Old Timers debut, it is going to be an absolute mind bleep, because I'm gonna think, well, there's no way I could think of myself as anything but a grown-ass adult watching Aaron Judge.
So I really don't have a problem with Judge. He's like probably the one guy that I look at, and I know later in life, one, I'm gonna be much older when those guys are Old Timers Day, so I'm not gonna really care about the age thing anymore. I feel like that's kind of over with. Like I know what I'm dealing with now. These guys, Aaron Judge is the generational talent, quote unquote. And if you're looking at that phrase, who was overusing the offseason for a guy that's disappointing all of Philadelphia right now. I you don't take that lightly, but I think he is. He's going to be most likely the next captain in pinstripes, I think, and he's just the guy that's going to be a forever Yankee. So I have a very high level of appreciation, and I think the way that you go about your business, you know, you age be damned at that point. I'm trying to think who it was talking about the he was a Yankee in the 70s. I'm forgetting who it was who was actually talking. But anyway, he was talking about the one guy that he only admired, and he had one piece of memorabilia, and that it was Bernie Williams. And he had a signed picture of Bernie Williams. And this is a guy who played in the 70s and admired the people underneath him. And I think that's what I have for Judge and maybe a couple other guys, and that's how I'll look at them down the line.
Yeah, we'll see. Time will tell. I thought it was going to be. It isn't really weird that all most of the players are all younger than me. Like all of the kids who came up over the last couple seasons are all younger than me. I was thinking it was going to be weird, but it's not. You just root for them.
Yeah, that's it. All right, so let's get into some
Cameron Maybin first.
Wrap up the injuries real quick. Cameron Maybin has been unbelievable all season. We have not stopped raving about this guy. And we knew that there were going to be very tough decisions coming in when Judge came back, and that everybody was concerned that Maybin was going to be the guy that was released essentially or traded away or whatever, but not on the team. Unfortunately, that was a moot point because he came up with an injury. He is had a serious calf strain, and now he's going to be out most likely, you know, a couple months, most likely 6 weeks plus. So really unfortunate way that Cameron Maybin went down because he was playing so well. He deserved to be playing baseball, whether it was with the Yankees or another team. The guy earned every single penny that he earned this season and was unbelievable. So it's really it's an unfortunate ending to the Cameron Maybin time in Yankees pinstripes, because you got to figure that's what it is.
But he made the cut. They didn't send him down, or they didn't do anything with him when Judge came back. So he stayed on the team. Who knows?
It was situational, though.
Maybe it was situational, and then after London, they do something with Cameron Maybin. But we don't know. We'll never know.
It's
so unfortunate for him.
Yeah.
So unfortunate. And it solves the fifth outfielder problem that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing they might call up another position player for London. It'll be interesting to see if it's Clint Frazier or who it is. If it's Mike Tauchman and not Clint Frazier,
defensive move. That's it. I mean, but that shows you what they're there for. If Mike Tauchman gets pulled up instead of Clint Frazier, it's a defense move. They needed another outfielder, and they obviously don't trust Clint Frazier and his defense. So it'll be interesting how that works. But I do think it's going to be another pitcher. I think with the schedule being weird and just, I know there's off days, but it's still.
Yeah, you can do more position players because everyone's going to get 2 days off going into that London series. So if you call up another pitcher, you're not going to use that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I guess a Boston series, you want that extra bat, I guess, to play the matchups when you can to take advantage of those, especially if you have a rested bullpen who's much better than their bullpen. That would seemingly be the move. And, you know, pretty good damn bat down in the minor leagues right now with Clint Frazier, who is you know, comes back with a vengeance too. As soon as he gets sent down, hits a freaking moonball in Scranton, as you would expect, because, you know, guy plays perfect with a chip on his shoulder. A couple more injury updates. Actually, I talked about those. Ben Heller and Severino coming back soon. Awesome.
To stop you. You stopped yourself.
Here we go with, we're going to get into some mailbags. First one is from Glenn Johnson. This is in our Facebook group. In 2019, the Yankees are batting .293. with runners in scoring position as a team. Last year, they hit .253 with runners in scoring position. The last two teams to lead Major League Baseball in hitting with runners in scoring position have won the World Series. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so he just posted this in the group, but I thought this is a great preface for a question. What's the biggest difference? There are certain guys that you put in here. LeMahieu, .470. He's been talked about as the risk god all season. But other guys as well, Gio Urshela and Clint Frazier, have both hit well with runners in scoring position in the .370s. Gleyber Torres hitting .367 with runners in scoring position. We didn't see these kinds of batting averages out of anyone with runners in scoring position. And all of these guys have had ample opportunities also to get plate appearances with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not a small sample size, and I love using the batting average here because it's convenient, and it tells nerds to you know, go away, go back in the tunnel, go hide in your tunnel. And you're looking at, I mean, when you see top, when you see four players in the top 10 in runners in scoring position in the American League, that's amazing. I mean, like, literally that is the change. If you made one change from last year's team, I feel like that would be my change. It would be hitting with runners in scoring position. They hit the ball.
One of these guys was on the roster last year, like full-time, Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, that's it. Gleyber Torres, but he was also dealing with what we think is a nagging hip injury second half of the year. So, and Clint Frazier's not even on this team, but he's had ample times with runners in scoring position up in the Bronx as well. So, you know, good sample size. The fact that these guys are making contact at key opportunities, I love it. We saw it again with Stanton now on Saturday with two massive singles that drove in runs that were, you know, a key to the game. So they're coming up in big situations, and it's not always with the home run ball. And that's huge. So
runners in scoring position, clutch stats, just to play devil's advocate here, there's no metric says that this will continue because analytics people don't believe in runners in scoring position. They believe that what you do is what you do. It doesn't matter who's on base, what the situation is, first inning, fifth inning, ninth inning. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, this goes back to the whole conversation you were having with Robert Flores about clutch, and if you believe in clutch, and if you believe that a guy can get into a different feeling, a different position mentally, physically, in a big situation, can he lower the heart rate? Can he get to the place where he's calm and can just effectively execute his mechanics, or does he tense up and do things a little bit differently? And I think that's a real thing. I personally absolutely believe in that, and I think when you see the guys who are doing it. You're seeing Clint Frazier with the bat speed. We know he can get to a ball and insanely fast and kind of make up for not seeing it as well. LeMahieu, who is just fundamentally sound everywhere. Urshela, who's been making a ton of contact. And then Gleyber Torres, I think, is one of the better pure hitters on this team that we're expecting a massive year from. So I think we're seeing more of that control the strike zone, you know, thing that Boone talks about all the time and making contact. And I don't know, man. Like, I do think in that moment, there are guys that can just bring it down a level.
And it might be not philosophical, that's not the right word. It might be something that was really talked about leading into the season and in spring training. Guys, as a unit, we need to be better in these situations.
Yeah, but that's one of those, that's easy to say, but hard to execute unless you have the
player. No, why? You like, can,
do
you
we,
can,
do we try harder and when there's runners in score?
But like, no, you can. You can practice something.
How do you practice with runners in scoring? It's a tough thing to actually replicate unless you're in the moment. That's the thing with runners in scoring position. It's hard to put a situation to practice in high leverage situations. It's just
you can't simulate difficult. Pressure,
right?
You cannot simulate pressure, but you can simulate
contact.
Okay, on this situation, I am going to hit the ball to right field or the opposite way, or just try and put bat on ball rather than trying to hit it to Monument Park.
So that's where you practice it. That's the execution part. The mechanical difference is trying to spray the ball, go with the pitch, do what you can. And if you're practicing that, if you're practicing hitting the ball to all fields, that's to me, you can absolutely practice that. And if that becomes the more of the approach, we're shortening up the swing, just trying to get the bat on ball. Like, okay, I love that. If that's the case, if that's something they worked on, absolutely. I think every baseball player ever in baseball should be working on that because it's an essential part of the game. But yeah, it's good to see, and it's going to be huge. And if it can continue, that's going to be probably the storyline, one of the storylines in this season that these guys were executing with runners in scoring position. And if they could do that and take that into the playoffs, like, there you go. That's a big difference maker, and we can probably look to a lot of situations last year where it failed us and they didn't have good opportunities. Next one is from Ben Payne. He says, does Gary have a shot at MVP?
I think he definitely has a shot. He's not the leading contender right now for MVP, but if you just look at his ranks amongst AL for all offensive players, 23 home runs, leads the American League, 973 OPS, 153 OPS plus, and he's amassed 2.7 WAR, according to Baseball Reference, to this point in the season, and he leads catchers and everything. Every offensive metric, Gary Sanchez is leading home runs, RBI, slugging, OPS. He's been an absolute force. I think that there'll be uh, the the people to detract from him, they'll talk about his framing and how he's actually not adding more value to the team because his framing has gone down and his defensive advanced metrics are worse than the previous two seasons, even though eyeballs tell you otherwise. So they'll be the detractors, but I don't know. Gary Sanchez has been one of the two key offensive players on this team to date. Him and LeMahieu.
When you're looking at the MVP votes, it's hard. It's going to be difficult for the Yankees, I think, to get that guy in there at the top because of who's now coming back: Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and the amount of people that contributed in the first half. I think Sanchez absolutely is in the conversation when you see what he's doing defensively. And I have a feeling because the eyeball test doesn't fail me usually, we're going to see some of these defensive metrics catch up. And I don't think that narrative will be as glaring as they think it is come the season, because I think that, you know, for this frame rate, I do believe there's too much human element in it. So I think we're going to see some variance in there and come back to more of a positive side. But it's going to be difficult because the Yankees have so many dominant players. And if they keep this going, there's going to be so many people that you're looking at that were top contributors that helped this team out. And especially with Judge coming back now, I feel like that hurts.
You do. So the only saving grace, if we're just talking strictly MVP votes, catchers get a little bit extra credit.
Right. As they should, because they have the most physically demanding position on the field. And I think he absolutely warrants it because I definitely look at him as a comeback player of the year. Like he's going to have that probably on lock if we're looking at, you know, what he came back from last year.
Just quickly on Gary Sanchez, I don't know if you saw that thread on Twitter. I forget the kid's name who tweeted it out, but I know it was posted in our Facebook group. Gary Sanchez has the little icons for all of the pitchers for his little cheat sheet on his forearm thing.
Yeah,
so that was kind of fun.
Maybe that's him. Maybe that's the emojis coming back. It's Gary Sanchez.
Right. Yeah.
Brings him back in real life. Doesn't have him on Twitter. Brings him back in real life.
Didi printed them out for him and then stuck them to his forearm.
No, I think Didi drew them, right? Didi drew them.
Yeah, that's true.
And then made them into a sticker and then put them on there.
Actually, Didi should have his own line of emojis. He should draw them and then create a Didi app.
A Didi app with an icon set. You're right. We could do this for him.
Yeah, business idea. No one steal it.
Last thing before we wrap up is it's from at JasonA525, and this is talking more about the trade deadline. But should the Yankees be looking at Cleveland starters besides Bauer? I know Bauer's been one of the guys. Him, Mad Bum, and Scherzer have been, and Marcus Stroman, who dominated the Red Sox and pissed off Dennis Eckersley, which I love, which made me kind of want him a little bit more, to tell you the truth. But the other guys, should we be talking about Clevinger or Kluber? He says, I know Kluber is injured now, but Clevinger did come back off the DL, and Cashman has made deals with Cleveland before. Thoughts on those guys?
Clevinger just went back on the IL with an ankle sprain
like
2 days ago. I want, if you're talking about, and Trevor Bauer was transferred to the 60-day injured list on June 18th with a non-displaced fracture of his right ulna bone. See, I'm playing doctor in this episode. If I'm going
except that
to...
you meant Corey Kluber and not Trevor Bauer, but okay. You have to get the patient information is first and foremost, Andrew. First
Corey
and foremost.
Kluber is injured on the IL. Trevor Bauer is the pitcher I would most want from the Cleveland staff. It would take a lot. He is, I believe, still in arbitration or one year left in arbitration. So Cleveland would not give him up lightly. And I think also another sort of wrinkle in Cleveland is, would they even consider taking Clint Frazier back? Is that something that they want to do? Would that just look poorly on them to have to take back a prospect they traded away a couple years ago? So if that's the case, and Clint Frazier is one of your biggest bargaining chips for Brian Cashman, is he even off the table for a potential Cleveland pitcher? So I don't know.
He also, I mean, when we're talking about Clint and just hearing some of the stuff he said too, he has referenced and brought up Cleveland as one of the places that he was, you know, not really truly understood, or he had to do things differently. Like, so
I have a feeling he'd have said that about anybody.
I understand that, but he did say it about Cleveland. So, I mean, there probably was, and kind of knowing what we know about him, I would not be surprised if there was, you know, a little bit of tension or friction or whatnot at some point during that. So it would be, I think it would, that would be a tough sell to bring him back. But again, you got also looking at what the, what the Yankees have with Florial as a top prospect, I think that they would, you know, be all over that if you could get the package in the right place.
Would Trevor Bauer struggle with the New York media? He is very outspoken on Twitter. Jason Stark, I think, called him out on Twitter maybe last week, like subtweeted him.
Yeah.
Very bizarre.
So I don't think he would actually.
Or Keith Law, maybe one of those national like athletic guys, I think might have done it.
It feels like Trevor Bauer would almost just like embrace it and kind of love the little back and forth. He seems like the guy that kind of embraces the debate, embraces like the weirdness of it. He's a weird dude, I think. He's got like a quirky personality. So I actually don't think he would. I think he would kind of go walk into the New York media and understand what it is, and handle it okay. And even if there was a little weirdness,
would the Yankees PR allow him to embrace the media like that, or would they try to put a muzzle on him and say just talk without really saying anything?
No, I think at that point when you get traded over, like you're in position now.
We know what we're getting.
Do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, as long as you pitch well. Whatever. That's the thing.
That's one of those
performing on the field. A lot of things solve themselves by performing on the field. I can't fucking do this anymore. We can't.
I'm stopping right now.
End it. And I'm going to also, in the beginning of this, this is going to sound like shit. In the beginning of this, I'm going to say we had a lot of connection issues. Please bear with us or something, because there's going to be 50 cuts in this.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. We have had probably the worst technical show we've had ever. So what number is this again? Let me go back up so we can curse this number for the rest of the 343. 343 will go down as the number that I'll never want to see again. But thanks for bearing with us. We've had some cuts. We had some connection issues. So thanks for bearing with us. And Andrew, any last words? I'm glad you survived. We had a good weekend without you. We will be there. You will be there for the July 20th event. Any last words?
My last words are, do not sleep on the Toronto Blue Jays just because you got London ahead of you. Kick the shit out of them.
Good enough. We got to beat the in-division foes, number one. London coming up. Big week of baseball. All-star game. Vote for our guys. Get them in. I know pretty much everybody's in the final vote, so go vote for them. Go Yankees.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.